Sure.
G'day to everyone. I hope all of your listeners are going well, and especially if you're in Victoria, that you're building a good and safe way out, coming out of the restrictions.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, people should be aware that despite the mainstream coverage and people's relief about coming out of lockdown, we have had over 1,000 cases yesterday and 10 deaths.
Yes.
So it's not that it is beholden on people to behave in a public health responsible way.
Yes. Well, Annie, I thought we should talk about two of the things you've already been talking about, but maybe from slightly different angles, and that is the Fair Work Commission decision about the Horticultural Board, and then secondly, about a couple of important aspects of the struggles that are at a pinpoint at the moment in Glasgow and in many other parts around parts of the world.
Yeah, I've been looking up the it was interesting to me to read the summary of the Fair Work Commission's findings and then looking at its actual decision.
Yes.
It's interesting how they couch it in the idea that ensuring that there is a base rate of pay for agricultural workers will be a productivity gain, because it would mean that the farmers would have to actually manage their workers better. I thought that was a rather cute way of putting it.
Well, first, good on you for reading the summary of the decision. a lot of activists who are pontificating their views about what it means, especially in Facebook threads, haven't done that. And it might make a difference to the quality of the discussion in our Labor movement if they did. And what's more, I think, and this is one of, I think, the overarching features of this decision, is that it is about the award, not the enterprise agreement. And therefore, it enables this, I don't know whether it will be a couple of days, a few days, or a few weeks, for Labor movement activists to restore a focus on learning about what the significance of the award is, and therefore, in this context, the significance of this decision.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I've been noticing that enterprise agreements is something that came in during the Keating period, and it was supposedly, I suppose, to sort of change increase the outcomes for workers over the award. Now, the award is the previous established process that workers fought for. And now we're in battle, aren't we? The EBA system and the award system are now in battle.
Yes, well, the, that's a bigger discussion which we perhaps should develop further. But yes, you're right. I mean, the enterprise bargaining system is like a drug. And most of the institutional union movement is addicted to it. and so even though it's a failing system, we celebrate, you know, there's fewer agreements being negotiated and the quality of them from the point of view of workers is less. We celebrate each one and then promise that we'll get off the drug and turn to more complete industry bargaining in some form or another. And the awards are the most important potential form to replace genuine power-based bargaining for workers instead of this depowering addiction to enterprise bargaining.
Yeah. So how does that affect this particular, you know,
what this decision does is it creates the opportunity for discussion, not just about the particulars of the decision, but about how important an award is, and how important the restoration of the dominant status of awards is over the next few years. And that needs a strategy which we won't have time to go into today. The second thing it does is open up discussions about just what are piece rates relative to the hourly rate. Now, this particular award, the Horticulture Award, and I think most others that have a piece rates clause in them, and it always pays to learn the contents of an award. That's pretty important for labour movement activists, many of whom are good at learning the contents of an enterprise agreement, but it's a bit of a novelty to learn about an award.
It's also hard too, because it's an illegal document. Yeah, it's a legal document, and it's part of the business about. So I didn't just read the summary. I was working on the draft determination, and it's interesting.
Well, good. So you went to that part of the decision at the end that provides the draft new language in the award.
That's right.
That replaces the current language,
and it's quite it's quite challenging, because if you look at the. The change that they were seeking, the AWA action sought to vary the clause 15.2 of the Horticultural Award, which deals with piece rates. Now, if you read the existing clause, you can see that it looked as if it wasn't designed to create unfairness in the system for the workers. But of course, in practicality, in practical terms, it wasn't enforced. And so all the power relations between the employer and the worker stripped the intention of the clause, and the farmers or unscrupulous farmers just bullied workers into incredible low rates.
Well done you again, because you've read the current award language and you've read the proposed new award language. Now, there are a couple of points there. Firstly, the new award language is not yet fixed into the award. It's put there in the decision as the draft that the Commission is recommending. And there is now a period, I think, through to the end of November.
Yeah, it's...
Where the parties can dispute or argue the language that the Commission has chosen. So it is quite likely that the employers will argue for new language that they will intend to dilute the content of the new entitlement that workers would have in the industry. So the immediate struggle is to defend what has been achieved and ensure that it is indeed fixed into the award with an operating date for as quickly as possible. Keep in mind that the Australian Workers Union lodged this case, started this case in December last year. They didn't get a fair dinkum hearing until March in front of what is a stacked commission by LNP governments. And they've only got this decision, what is it now?
It's a year later almost.
It's eight months.
Yeah, that's right.
It's taken 8 months.
And getting it to this point has been an ongoing grassroots campaign, not just by AWU, but the UWU and a whole range of other, reports coming out of different universities and other think tanks that have been working on this for years. The lack of transparency and the skullduggery that goes on in this area is amazing.
The really important conclusion from what you're saying is do not fall for the nonsense that some people in the Labor movement will promote, is that the Commission is the answer to our problems. The Commission itself has been dragged kicking and screaming into making a good decision. It hasn't done so because the Act enables a straightforward decision to be made. It's depended upon lots and lots of different forms of campaigning to get to this point, so that the evidence and the arguments were so overwhelming that we get quite a positive proposal from the Commission about the language. And I would bet But that language was probably originally drafted in its submissions by the Australian Workers Union and the United Workers Union. Keep in mind that the Australian Workers Union lodged the case in December. The first hearing, both the Australian Workers Union and the United Workers Union, who both have the rights to organise workers in this industry, were both pursuing this claim. And they will no doubt use their different methods of organising, or their common methods of organising, and hopefully some united organising, to now ensure that, firstly, that the language that's been proposed by the Commission is indeed fixed into the award quickly, there's no delay, and that, secondly, that more and more workers are organised and empowered to make sure they themselves, on the farm sites, police the awards so that employers do not dodge it and get away with wage theft.
Well, we should move on to the other part of our conversation, because I'm the timekeeper. But before we do...
One more sentence on that.
Yeah, cool.
This is where I'm slightly critical of what Matt Kunkel said.
Yeah,
we must be very careful about how we talk about piece rates. And in the hourly rate is an exploitative rate. Piece rates are an exploitative system. What we have in this result is a reduction in the rate of exploitation.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's not the defeat of exploitation.
Yeah, well put.
So interesting. Let's go on to the
yeah,
other
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's really interesting. About. Okay, let's move on, because I'm a timekeeper and you have only got a limited amount of time.
I think the big thing coming up out of Glasgow is, firstly, that at the present time, it's blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
To capture Greta Thunberg's memorable summing up of where the dominant managers of the system are in dealing with the reversal of climate heating. And on the opposite side, there are literally thousands, probably more, of people's organisations, union organisations, or all sorts of people's organisations that are opposing this very, very slow momentum, if there is any, to reverse global heating. And they are doing so in many cases with alternative programs. Some of them are very community orientated. Some of them are regional and industry orientated. We have the great work of the Victorian Trades Hall Council in developing industry orientated just transition programs. There's so many of them. How do we sift out, from the point of view of workers and their communities, the ones that are really the ones, the principles, the concepts that are really in our interests? Because some just transition programs care very little or not a jot at all about the standard of living of workers during transition. And I've written an article about this to try and lay out several principles that any one of us who is engaged in the struggle against climate heating and environmental degradation generally, that we can use to evaluate transition programs or Green New Deal programs. The key word is democracy. To what extent is the proposal empowering or based upon and driven by workers and working class communities? In other words, if they originate from technocratic experts, at what point do the people who are most profoundly affected take over the management and leadership of the transition plan? So there are some other principles involved.
All right, you have to give me a link to this particular article so I can put it on our podcast page, okay?
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me, but I can send it to you.
Okay, you can't just throw that into the ether without giving us a link, okay?
It's at the Carmichael Centre website.
Okay.
For anyone who's interested. The second aspect of this is, I think, it is about the big picture and all the talk about the finance that would be available to drive the transition from fossil fuels, fossil-fueled economies to renewable economies. Now, in 2009, in all of the discussions at the time, the 32 richest nations that make up the OECD, that is led these days by guess who?
Who?
Matthias Korn.
Yeah, that's what I thought I was going to say.
Remember all that?
Yeah, okay. I do remember.
So the OECD...
They've been playing chess for a while, these guys.
Yeah. So they promised in 2009 that $100 billion a year in climate finance to poorer countries. Hmm. And that formed the basis of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord, which aimed to get global warming below 2 degrees, pushing towards 1.5.
Who stole the money?
Well, they missed their target in 2020, and they don't think they'll even get close to it until next year or the year after. Now, then it gets interesting. The 32 countries, there are only 3 countries that were on target in making sure that their climate finance support to the less developed nations were Norway, Sweden and Germany. Of the 32 countries who failed, the 29 other countries who failed to meet their responsibilities and promises, the United States was the worst.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Guess who was the fourth worst?
Us.
Then we go on, and we might finish it around this point.
Who are the others? The ones in between?
In between, you've got France, who was close to it, and then above us, New Zealand is next. If New Zealand was the fifth worst, we were the fourth worst.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And so it goes on.
Yeah, cool.
In between, you know, all sorts of countries that are a part of the developed countries, 32 organisations that make up the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Mm-hmm.
Now we get to the interesting part from an Australian point of view, and that is the complete failure of employers, especially during the period of Liberal and National Party governments, to invest productively in the new technologies that Morrison says is the way to go.
Kelsey-Pree.
Now, the way to understand it, productive investment is essentially the buildings and structures, machinery and equipment that is going to drive, that is going to be the technology, if you like, that workers who are paid to use it to produce the goods and services that will be renewable in character, right? That productive investment in manufacturing in particular, and that's the critical one, has been declining, the longer-term trend of decline, but it has been declining particularly since the last financial downturn, economic downturn, and supervised in declining by LNP governments.
God, they're so full of shit, aren't they?
Now, when you look at, that's the raw numbers, when you look at the record, how much they have been willing to spend, you see, that sort of productive investment comes out of profits.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so if we do know that the overwhelming general trend in profits is upwards, therefore the available, the volume of available profit to spend on productive investment is actually higher, but the portion has been going down in Australia. Supervised, as I say, in its role as the government by Liberal National Party governments.
So basically business taking a free ride.
I would call it corporate bludging.
Bludging, yeah. And this is also reflected in the continual very low investment in development, you know, resources and R&D, right?
Yes. Now, this brings us back to perhaps my final point. And in a terrific tutorial run by the Life Campaign last week, if I may be so bold as to say, Colin Long made a from the Victorian Tradesaw Council made a critical point that when it comes to the investment decision, that is actually workers' business, union business, community business. But the Fair Work Act prohibits, on a in a legal sense, the capacity of workers and their unions to make it their business.
Yep.
So there is a link between workers' rights. We come to the democratic just transition. Democratic just transition must include that workers assert their right defiantly to argue with their employer about how much of their profit they are investing to reverse global heating.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
can be done at an enterprise level, at a workplace level.
Oh, this is a fascinating level. End to this conversation. This opens such a can of worms. Fantastic stuff.
Well, talking about these things.
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? It basically, they have to open their books, but this goes straight to the heart of the system that we're in. It's interesting you should mention this because I listened to another conversation. We really have to finish.
The big picture issue for us is that we must mobilise in every possible way to defeat this government and replace it. Now, what should be the replacement? My view is that the best possible result in the circumstances we're in is a Labor government dependent upon Greens support and with a growing mass movement which has many democratic just transition programs, keeping the pressure on to make sure that that new government respects the word transition. In other words, that what it does, what that new Labor Green government does is transitionary. There is no end point.
What, permanent point revolution?
That's a transition to the next transition.
Yeah, permanent revolution.
That's the biggest big picture thing that we should all be working towards in the Australian circumstances.
Okay, Don, we have to go. We've got 3 minutes. We're up to the wire. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Lovely to be with you again, and all the very best.